tonight on The Daily Debrief.
He kept her under serious, constant emotional distress.
The trial of a Wisconsin judge accused of stalking his own court clerk.
He just can't leave me alone.
Plus, closing arguments in the case of three Chicago cops accused of covering up this deadly shooting. And the story behind this mugshot. That's tonight on The Daily Debrief for Thursday, December 6th. And good evening, everybody. Opening statements today in the criminal prosecution of an attorney made famous in the Netflix film Making a Murderer. Len Kaczynski, for a time, represented murder defendant Brendan Dassey. Dassey confessed to the murder of Teresa Halbach before Kaczynski was even on the case. But the actions of Kaczynski and his investigator enraged audiences worldwide. Kaczynski went on to become a municipal judge in northeastern Wisconsin. He's charged with stalking his law clerk. The whole thing started as a personnel dispute, which then resulted in a restraining order. Kaczynski originally faced two misdemeanors for violating the restraining order, but the prosecutor dropped those two charges days before the trial. What remains is the stalking charge. The statute in question in Wisconsin is complicated. The state needs to prove that a reasonable person would suffer serious emotional damage, that the victim would suffer the same, and that this victim actually did suffer the same. The state also needs to prove a course of conduct that led to some of those actions. Let's take a look at the penalty now. It's a possible $10,000 fine and a possible 3.5 years in prison if Len Kaczynski is indeed convicted. Let's go straight to the opening statements. The prosecutor said the relationship between the clerk and Kaczynski started off well, but then deteriorated.
Mandy and the defendant got along really well. You might even call them friends or at the very least close coworkers. But some events occurred in March or April of 2017 that caused Mandy to be somewhat concerned about how close they were. You'll hear her testify to those concerns, and you'll hear that those concerns were addressed with Mr. Kaczynski in May of 2017. As a result of those concerns, she had one small request. Please keep things work-related and professional. Well, this didn't sit well with Mr. Kaczynski. Now, you'll hear that throughout the summer, throughout the fall, throughout the winter, into 2018, all the way to the summer of 2018, he continued to try to pursue a personal relationship with Mandy Bartel over her objections. Now, often when an employee has a conflict with their boss, there's a supervisor or a boss's boss that this can be brought to. But Leonard Kaczynski was an elected judge. He didn't have a boss to report to.
The structure of the system made it complicated, and a restraining order apparently did nothing, the prosecutor argued.
This defendant went from trying at any length to force Mandy to engage in this personal friendship, this personal relationship, to retaliating against her for her refusal to be his friend. Even the state courts had little effect on this defendant. In February, a restraining order was granted, prohibiting him from harassing Mandy. In June, that was extended. Each time, he was advised to keep things professional, to only have contact that's necessary to run the municipal court of Fox Crossing. That's why we're here, because no matter who asked Leonard Kaczynski to back off, to keep things professional, to refrain from having communications of a personal nature, Leonard Kaczynski couldn't do it. For over a year, he made Mandy Bartel's life utterly miserable. But more than that, he kept her under serious, constant emotional distress.
The defense said Len Kaczynski was a quirky man struggling with cancer and blamed Making a Murderer for some of his client's issues.
He was facing a trip to the hospital for cancer treatment. He had already decided to end his private practice because of this diagnosis, but the release of Making a Murderer assured that that portion of his career was likely over. He could still practice doing criminal appeals for the state public defender, They didn't require many court appearances, and he could read transcripts while stuck in a hospital bed. You will hear testimony that his reputation of one being odd and quirky. But each of the witnesses that say this will say they are unsatisfied with that definition and will tell you as if it should be self-explanatory when you describe him. He's just Lynn. You will hear as well that they know he would be heard to meow randomly on occasion. You will hear testimony from a witness that will tell you she would run with Lynn, and if he would pass a flagpole, he would stop and salute. But from each of these witnesses, you will hear that they found him endearing, if a little odd at times.
Kaczynski's defense further argued that the victim's complaints occurred just a short time after they shared a closer relationship.
That was it. She was done. She had no contact with him. And all this occurred only months after she's messaging him how concerned she's about how he's doing at the hospital. Only months after she's messaging him that she is crying because she's not heard that he's okay. Now, the state said that she asked for one small thing. She asked for no non-work-related conduct. And it's going to be important right here, at this moment, that you look at what happened. Because you'll hear evidence of what she asked for is no non-work-related conduct because she's concerned about work being done. You'll hear testimony that Lynn agreed to not have any contact outside of work if that's what she wanted. Realized the friendship was done shortly thereafter. But continued to ask for a low-level personal relationship. That when you come into work, we should be able to say, how's it going? How was your weekend? Water cooler conversation. That we should be able to interact with the humans without an officer watching everything we do. And without restriction that I never say anything about my life or you never say anything about yours.
Joining me tonight on the Daily Debrief are juvenile court judge Ashley Wilcott and attorney and former Court TV correspondent Michael Bryan. So, Judge, let me start with you. A lot of Making a Murderer fans want Lynn Kaczynski's head on a platter, but the state dropped the two lesser charges here for strategic reasons. Why do you think that happened?
Well, I do think that's because the restraining order, there was certain language that they would have to be able to prove he intentionally violated. And I think that it was a subjective method. He could not use any non-work communication. And so
Judge, sorry, I think we may have lost you there. Michael Bryan, I want to throw a question your way here. The defense is twofold in this case. One part is that this was a friendly relationship, rather, where the victim was crying over Lynn Kaczynski's cancer diagnosis, sharing other personal feelings here. Is that effective for a defense strategy?
You know, it's interesting because the initial relationship was somewhat sympathetic. In fact, she seemed to like the guy and felt truly sorry for his medical problems. So I think that does build some sympathy for the defense. It's a good way to start.
Okay, another question I had here. The defense also said witnesses will testify who perceived Kaczynski as quirky, weird, socially awkward, whatever you want to call it, but nothing further. This seems to be getting at the reasonable person standard that the state has to ride over, and that's the biggest hurdle here for the state.
It is. It's tricky. So the question is Judge Lynn quirky, creepy, or criminal? And they have to get to that third level on a subjective and an objective basis under the statute to find that he caused this severe or emotional distress that she's claiming.
Reasonable person standard, big picture, every man, every woman standard, that's going to be a little bit tricky for the state to ride over here, especially if you have these defense witnesses who say, well, you know, we just kind of know that that's the kind of guy he is.
Yeah, he's a goofy guy. You know, it's Lynn. That's, everybody knows him as Lynn. He has his own little proclivities. But as you heard the victim lay out the different events that took place, it was escalating to the point where it was a little beyond quirky to at least creepy.
We're going to move right straight to testimony now. The woman who accused Kaczynski of stalking was the state's first witness, of course. Here she testifies about a bizarre email she received from Kaczynski after getting other county leaders involved.
Do you recognize this exhibit?
Yes.
What is it?
It is an email to me wishing my husband a happy Father's Day.
And who is it from?
It is from Lynn Kaczynski.
And What's the subject line of that email?
The subject line is rule violation.
And can you read the entirety of that email? I know it's a short one.
He states, Mandy, I realize that this email violates every principle we've talked about regarding office conduct the last few weeks, but I am sending it anyway. Feel free to report me to HR. I feel spunky this morning. Happy Father's Day to your husband, Doug.
Thank you. How did you feel when you read this email?
I thought we talked about things over and over and over and over at this point in time, and it continues.
In reading that email, did you believe he would abide by your wishes to keep things professional?
I was hoping so, but no.
Len Kaczynski felt spunky on Father's Day. That was the email. Later, the victim said Kaczynski made threats when others were not present.
He had actually physically got up, went over the desk, and asked me, are you afraid of me now? Because I was sitting there, and I was by myself. And he sat there and asked me if I was afraid because nobody else was around.
What was the volume level of his voice when he said that?
He was whispering.
Was your office service window open at the time?
Yes.
How did you react at that time?
I was in shock that he was actually leaning over, knocking my things over, knocking my kids' pictures over, and asking me if I was actually afraid of him and in my face.
That incident came after the victim asked for a third party to be present for her with meetings with Kaczynski. The victim went on to describe living in fear but refusing to quit because she needed the job and the benefits.
Did you still feel scared or harassed by the actions of the defendant?
Pretty much on a daily basis, yes.
Now, did this blend into your home life in any way?
Absolutely.
In what way?
Either it was like I was crying or yelling or upset, to the point where we would get on the phone with each other because I have two boys. I mean, we had to take care of them, and all I did was argue about he just can't leave me alone. And it was a point where it was every day my husband would go, what's next? What did he do today? And I would say every single day. There could have been upwards of 10 emails, maybe one, maybe zero, but there it was just every single day. And it was sometimes, you know, we should have been doing family things and we weren't because I was griping to my husband about everything that I was going through.
Did you take any precautions at home to make yourself feel better?
Absolutely.
What'd you do?
At home, we do have an alarm system on our house. There was a time where we'd come home, and a second we came home, we put that on. We shut our curtains. I was scared.
Forced to acknowledge that she did share a close relationship with defendant Len Kaczynski.
He was in the hospital.
Okay, and at that time, he was limited and not supposed to leave the hospital, correct?
He was not supposed to leave, that is correct, which I did not know until later.
Okay, but so he did come up and participate in that race that day?
He did, yes.
And you were actually at the finish line cheering him on when he completed?
Yes, because I participated as well as my husband and my boys.
So you and your boys and your husband were there cheering him on when he completed?
As well as our human resources and Karen Nagorny, who actually ended the race with him.
Okay.
And this is when I'm cheering him on, making sure, I mean, from, you know, he has his medical issues, and I am encouraging him. So it says, Judge Kay, you did a great job today. We're all there for you today. Please let me know when you're up to or how you're feeling. It was a lot today, but I know you are such a strong person. Glad to see you and truly brought tears to my eyes when you crossed the finish line, knowing how hard you fight. You have such a great family and friend support. Talk with you soon.
Okay. So, I mean, at this point in time, he's a friend to you.
Absolutely, and I was supporting him through his GVDB crisis.
Okay, and in fact, you would call him a good friend at this point.
I wouldn't call him a good friend. I wouldn't say good friend. I didn't tell him my deepest, darkest secrets. I would say friend, yes.
Let's head back to attorney Michael Bryant for assessment on this. Michael, I wanted to ask right off the bat here, what's your assessment of this witness's credibility?
I mean, I like her. I think it's very clear that she was bothered by this escalation of bizarre activity. And that's great as to the second prong in the statute. This particular victim definitely suffered some sort of distress as a result of the defendant's actions. But you don't even get there unless a jury can decide that those actions to a reasonable person were offensive, were threatening.
Okay, exactly. You took the second question right out of my mouth, as I figured you would, because you're following along very closely here. Okay, so how does the reasonable person take this? I mean, he's, you know, saluting flagpoles in the middle of his run. He's leaning over the desk saying, "Do I scare you now?" I mean, does the reasonable person think that this is just quirky, odd, bizarre, uncalled for? Or does the reasonable person take this as criminal stalking that should land somebody in prison for 3.5 years?
You know, the judge doesn't look like a threatening person. He looks like a cross between Pee Wee Herman and Ed Grimley. You know, he just doesn't look like he's going to threaten anybody by his physical being. So it's tougher. It's a tougher sell to get the reasonable person to find what he did and said was threatening.
Okay, a lot of this goes back to people's dislike of this guy from the Making a Murderer case. He represented Brendan Dassey. He got the case, I think it was a week or two after Dassey spoke with authorities, after the so-called confession was released to the public. A lot of people just didn't like the way Kaczynski and specifically his investigator handled the case. So a lot of people are watching this case thinking, well, you know, what goes around comes around. Maybe you should get nailed on this one. But that's not what this case is about. This
it
case is about
no.
what he did under the letter of the law and whether he broke the letter of the law.
Exactly. And part of the defense argument has been vaguely that, hey, this is an administrative attack on the defendant here, you know, that there are forces that just don't like this guy. You know, yeah, he was dismissed as the attorney in the case, and he rose to judge. I'm not sure how that works in the progression of profession from dismissed attorney to judge, but nonetheless, he's on the bench now, and there are those that feel he shouldn't be.
Well, he was tossed off the case, but he kept his law license. Michael Bryant, we'll check in with you again at the end of the story, at the end of the show here, rather, I should say. Still ahead, though, tonight on the Daily Debrief, closing arguments in the case of three Chicago cops accused of covering up this deadly officer-involved shooting. Let's head to Anthony Velez now with a recap of criminal newsworthy incidents.
Here are today's top crime stories trending on LawCrime.com and across the country. A woman in Ohio is facing charges after she allegedly poured hot grease on a person during a fight. 61-year-old Charlene Thompson, who had a pair of unrelated outstanding criminal warrants, was arrested after she allegedly tossed the grease on an unidentified victim during an argument at a residence in Cincinnati. The victim suffered severe burns to the back and arms from the attack. Thompson now faces a charge of felonious assault. Recently released court records reveal a Florida man accused of tossing his 5-year-old daughter off of a bridge to her death reportedly claimed voices urged him to do it. 29-year-old John Johnchuk allegedly stopped his car on Dick Meisner Bridge in Tampa Bay on January 8, 2015, and dropped his daughter, 5-year-old Phoebe, off of the edge of the bridge. Johnchuk reportedly told doctors voices told him everybody in the world was going to die if he didn't kill Phoebe. Johnchuk now faces a charge of first-degree murder and is expected to go on trial in March. A woman in Utah accused of killing her ex-husband's girlfriend in front of her 2 young children reportedly lured her ex-husband outside before sneaking inside to kill his girlfriend. 32-year-old Chelsea Watros Cook reportedly fatally shot 26-year-old Lisa Vallette Williams while visiting her ex-husband, Travis Cook. Cook allegedly shot Williams multiple times in front of her ex-husband and Williams' 2 3-year-old children. Williams' family reportedly claims Cook harassed Williams for months prior to the shooting. Cook now faces charges of first-degree aggravated murder, burglary, and violence in the presence of a child. Those were today's top crime stories. I'm Anthony Velez for the Daily Debrief.
Now to the case of an alleged cop cover-up in Chicago. This all surrounds what happened in this video we've shown you many times here, which shows Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke pulling the trigger on a knife-wielding teenager named Laquan McDonald. One jury convicted Officer Van Dyke of second-degree murder, but now 3 other officers are on trial for that shooting. The 3 men are accused of conspiracy, official misconduct, and obstruction of justice. Prosecutors say they lied in their official reports by claiming Laquan McDonald attacked the officer who shot him. Closing arguments in this case are happening as we speak right now in a courtroom in Chicago. Let's listen in live as attorney James McKay is giving defense arguments for Detective David March.
And in addition, you heard the final stipulations offered by David March today. You know now that David March testified twice in the Jason Van Dyke case. You know now, on June 28, 2017, and on October 8, 2018, David March testified. He was called by the prosecutors in that case. First time was live testimony. The second time was by way of stipulation. But you know now, Judge, that the prosecution in one courtroom relied on Dave March's words.
That is a totally improper argument. The idea that
I don't need any further argument on that. It's sustained.
The prosecutor called David March and did not attempt to impeach him.
Objection, Your Honor.
There's no evidence of that, Mr. McKay.
It is unfair for David March to be sitting in this courtroom and his words are used against him now. They can't have it both ways.
I think I'm done, right? I was going to.
And what are we talking about? We're talking about words. Like I said, David March has no personal knowledge. He wasn't there that night. So his words, not the words of the people he interviewed that he documents, his words come down in two places. His words, which are found in March Exhibit number 9, are as follows. His words that the recovered in-car camera video for beats 845R and 813R was viewed and found to be consistent with accounts of all of the witnesses. Second thing he said was his closing paragraph.
Attorney James McKay giving those closing arguments in the so-called cop cover-up case. He always is animated in court, and that has happened again in this case. I want to thank Michael Bryant for joining us here on The Debrief.
My pleasure. Thanks, Aaron.
Your insights are always insightful.
Thank you.
All right. Our live coverage of trials will pick up tomorrow beginning at 9 a.m. with this case and also the Len Kaczynski case we talked about earlier. I, of course, will see you on The Daily Debrief from 5 till 5:30 Eastern. From all of us at Law & Crime, have a good evening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.